Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Johan.
My name is Pat.
This is John.
And this is Chris. Are we supposed to start these episodes this way?
Typically, we leave off the "this is Chris" part, but otherwise, yeah.
No. Yeah, really, pretty
we'll
much.
We'll edit that out later along with everything.
Fine. Do you just not feel right if I don't give the bonus episode disclaimer?
I don't give a shit what you do. I'm just asking the question.
Okay. Well, apparently you do care since you asked.
Well, that's why I asked.
If this is your first time listening to Fear the Boot, we'd like you to know that this is a bonus episode. If you, it's horrible. Don't listen to it. Go back and listen to episode 21.
You didn't
explain. It's much more representative.
Episode 21? Good God, don't go listen to episode 21. Listen to like episode like 271 or something like that.
Oh, come on, 21's wonderful.
Or
Shaken, not stirred.
Well, neither am I.
Oh, good Lord. Longer disclaimer that Johan left out the important details is that this episode does not cover the topics we normally cover. Mm-hmm. And generally we'll have somewhat edgier topics discussed than what we usually do. Edgy. So it's not really representative of what Fear the Boot stands for, which is pretty much
boobs.
Just hating on riffs, boobs, and rigging the Ennies.
What makes you think this is my first time?
Oh, Mr. Bond.
Okay, so this particular bonus episode, we decided to title, and by we, I mean I, decided to title Go Away. What I want to go away is not a person. Well, there are maybe are some people who want to go away, but that's not what this episode's about.
And certainly not our listeners.
It's okay, Dan. You can call me out by name. It's all right.
Chris, I don't want you to go away. Here's what I want from you.
Chris, we actually want you to come here.
Yeah.
We want the opposite of go away.
One, we've been bitching at you for the past
6 years.
Yeah, which I realize to you is just like the passing of a day. But to us, that's a long time, okay? We've been bitching at you for like 6 years to move to St. Louis.
And out of that road warrior-like wasteland that you call a home.
And it is a fair point that eventually some glacier or whatnot will shift you to St. Louis. But we're not going to be there by then. So you need to think about moving. No, Chris, here's what I want from you. I want you to speak differently. Because all the audience hears is what I have done with your train wrecks. They do not see or hear what Chris sounds like unedited.
In the wild.
So what I want to challenge you to do, and someday I'm going to set loose a full Chris stream unedited.
No.
And like I'll put like a tone before it and after it. Maybe I'll even do it this episode. I'll put a tone before it and after it so people know they're about to get unedited Chris.
Do the cardiac stress test from episode 4, whatever that was. Is that thing still up on our feed?
Yes.
Yes.
Chad did the original one. I thought it was funny.
What you need to do, Dan, is over the next 10 episodes or so, just take all of the bits of Chris that you cut, string them together into one audio file and drop it as episode 300.
God, that's awesome. Be longer than the rest of our entire run combined.
Have bigger hard drives than they did in 2006.
All right,
they can take
it.
Right.
So
that's very true.
Chris, here's what I want you to do from now on. I realize we have strong personalities. I realize it's hard to get a word in edgewise. What I think is happening is you rush in where you can. You plant your flag. You claim this world for Spain. And you start talking, but because
you're... And I realize I'm not Spanish?
But because you are in such a rush to just get a word in edgewise, I don't think you fully thought through what it is you're trying to say. And so you're just kind of feeling it out as you talk. And so what I want you to do from now on is be like, hold on. And at that point, I will give you my word as moderator. I will make people stop. Or I will edit out whatever they say. And I want you to think. Clear your thoughts, figure out what it is you're going to say, and then speak in clear, cogent, unstuttered sentences.
I'm nodding in sage understanding at the moment, even though you can't see that.
Right, right. I could see it if you were in St. Louis, but you're not. That's what I want from you.
Hold on. Okay, go ahead.
See? It works. The power is there, Chris. The power is there. You just have to believe. So here's why I want to call this episode Go Away. I don't want Chris to go away. I like Chris on the episode. And I want Chris in St. Louis. I just wish he was a little easier to edit. There's no one on the show, in fact, I really want to go away. Nor any of the listeners that I want to go away. There are things in gaming I want to go away. And what I want to talk about, at least from my end, and you guys can bitch about whatever you want to bitch about, is things that were once novel in games, but have now become these dreadful, painful tropes. They are just omnipresent throughout the games. They've become ubiquitous to the gaming experience. And the one that I cannot stand is the traitor mechanic. Don't have a plot? No problem. Deal everyone a card, and one of them says, you're the traitor. And when the game master points at you, begin the party over. This was clever 5 years ago. This is not clever anymore. This has become the de facto plot of every game. And John, I want to thank you, by the way, in our brief and abortive Goblins one-shotter, for the fact that there was a particular player whose Chad name I won't mention that decided he was going to play a traitor all by himself, and you cut down his capacity to be a traitor within the first few hours of the game
by killing
all of his contacts.
Yep.
I want to tell you, thank you.
No problem.
So much for doing that.
Like we say, I'm a yes or a yes but GM. The answer to can I be a murderous traitor is yes, but the people you are working for are all going to die inside of 2 hours of the camera rolling.
The answer is yes, but no.
Exactly.
And, you know, when I sit down, and this is true in board games, where you sit down a game like Battlestar Galactica, this is true in role-playing games. You get it in tons of different role-playing games, especially the con one-shotters. You always get somebody who seems to think that the traitor mechanic is just the way of making the game great. And I can't stand it for this reason. In some games, it really works. But one, it has become the lazy man's plot.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a useful tool in the tool bag. It is the only tool. It is a hammer being used as every tool. And secondly, is the fact that part of my personal gaming taste is I don't mind. In fact, I enjoy some degree of question, some degree of intrigue, some degree of uncertainty. But when I have to spend the majority of the game glaring around the table, trying to add on layers and layers and layers of contingency plans to everything I'm doing, because I know at least one of the wads at the table is out to get me, for no other reason than the fact that it lets the GM off the hook of writing his f***ing plot. Because you being the traitor is now the plot. Oh, I can sit back and watch you guys create the plot for me. Well, then don't call yourself a game master. Just call yourself an antagonist.
The guy who hands out the traitor card.
Yeah, you're the guy who hands out the traitor card and then wanks the antagonism. Look, it's necessary in Are You a Werewolf? That's what the game's about. It works in some other games. I'm not saying it's a bad idea, period. But what I am saying is it's a bad idea, semicolon. Like, as in, there's going to be a pretty limited dependent sentence that comes after this. That's my rant.
I have absolutely no objection, and I'm going to go next because mine follows right on that train of thought. My thing that needs to go away is the cursed item. And this is common in fantasy, but it happens in other things too. It's the computer virus that takes over your ship.
Yep.
It's the
alien artifact that will defeat all the aliens, but you know damn well, if you do anything but destroy it, the sci-fi trope states, it must backfire on you.
Exactly.
You must regret it. Mass Effect 2, the collector station. It's got all this technology. It could change the war. And every logical fiber of my being said, we ought to keep this thing and study it. The only reason I destroyed it is because I knew the inescapable sci-fi trope is that if you keep it, you will regret it.
You were actually wrong. It adds to your battle value and does nothing to screw you over in 3.
I am shocked.
That's how it is?
That is unquestionably an exception.
Well, so it stands. Your trope aversion has betrayed you.
Okay.
But, I mean, I cannot tell you how many...
A sister.
Indeed.
I have a sister. My trope aversion betrays me.
I cannot tell you how many games I have seen essentially destroyed or at least irrevocably altered by the GM just throwing a cursed item in there of whatever the description is. The worst offenders are definitely the D&D standard. Oh, this is a sword that makes you chaotic evil. Ha ha ha. Now you don't have your character anymore. Play a bad guy.
Or I'm playing the bad
or
guy.
Or I'm playing, which is
you're
even
rerolling
worse.
A level 1 halfling bard.
Right. But that needs to end. No one should do it anymore. You get one cursed item in your entire GMing career. You get one. Make it count because you don't get to use it a second time.
I like the tension. I like the fact that the crap you dig out of the mummy's tomb might actually bone you. I don't think it should be every single time. I think it should be relatively simple to identify and get around it. But I like the idea that you have to take a risk if you want to just pick something out of the dead guy's claws and use it. Now, I don't think it should immediately make you a chaotic evil NPC in any circumstance at all. But
With great power comes great gender changing.
That's the classic one.
Like
I got
that.
A male character got a girdle of femininity.
Yeah.
It was, obviously, you know, planning. Oh, it was,
Pat,
it was great
fun for
the GM.
Every
they thought
single
it was
MMO
hilarious.
You touch. Why are you so mad when you have a girl of tabletop?
Well, this was back before I was playing MMOs, but yeah, and it, you know, and whatever.
If you can't visually see a representation of a butt cheek,
you
don't want to play a guy.
What's funny about it is that actually it didn't really upset me that much. What upset me more was the fact that the other, like the GM and some of the other players around the table did it and they thought that it was so funny and they were all getting such a kick out of it. That's what annoyed
that
me more than the fact that I was a chick. I didn't care. But it was like they thought, you know, this is so bad. Oh, look, we've so embarrassed you. And I'm like, well, that's just annoying. But yeah, anyway,
the worst offender I have ever come across while playing was a game that I was in where the game opener was, all right, you're all gladiators. You go out, go fight. And we go into the arena. There's a dragon. We have no weapons. There's crates everywhere. Very first action, very first character runs over, opens a crate, grabs a sword out of it. Curse sword. You're chaotic evil.
What
now.
The hell?
You can't put it down.
It's like dying in character creation.
Wow. That's horrible.
Yes. And the GM, you are listening now. I know you are. And no, I will never forgive you for that or ever let you live it down.
Yeah.
Now it's on permanent record.
Now it's gamer canon everywhere because it was on Fear the Boot.
And you know, so I have a similar cursed item story that I experienced for quite a while. And it was a Wand of Chaos, which is what that GM was calling a Wand of Wonder.
Right.
Okay, so it's a base of the classic Wand of Wonder, which is a cursed item. I don't care what you say about it. It's a piece of shit. It's a cursed item because there is basically, it's like a deck of many things.
I was just going to say, what do you think of the deck of many things?
The deck of many things and a Wand of Wonder serve two purposes, to fuck you.
Yes.
And
yes.
Many, a myriad of painful ways.
The other orifice.
That's really it. So, you know, and of course, those are classic stories. Now, they're fun to bring out once. Like you said, I think you experience a deck of many things. I think it's a rite of passage almost.
You've got to
do it.
And a wand of wonder.
You don't, you know, a Wand of Wonder, yes, but it literally became the focus of a campaign. And it was one of those things where it drove the plot, getting to sort of like to what you were saying, Dan, with the traitor mechanic. It's now we've got this campaign that is literally week to week. It is the GM making up a new list, a new 100 item list for the Wand of Chaos. He would do this every week. He would just reroll shit.
Who has that kind of time?
I know. It's not that he had like three or four. He came up with new shit every week.
College kids.
I know. I've had that kind of time. But like, I didn't sit around doing another 100 item table for the Wand of Wonder.
In college.
I wrote games.
And I was like, bingo. In college, when I had that kind of time, you know what I did? I created Apocryphos. I created Skies of Glass. I created that sci-fi fantasy mix setting that I pitched several episodes back. That's what I did with the time. I didn't write new 100 item lists every week.
You know, if this guy were clever, he would just turn it into one giant 300 page list that you need to roll a D100,000 for.
That would be awesome.
What he would have been better off doing is just finding
could make a supplement that was nothing but that. One table for one wand that goes on for 20 pages.
No, I'll give you some other way to do it.
If you had timed it right after the D20 explosion happened in 2002, you could have sold that book.
Yeah, sure.
Absolutely.
I'll give you some other way. Either A, enumerate, or B, randomize a dictionary. Just be like, what did it do? Aardvark. Okay, it just summoned an aardvark.
Yeah. No, that's just
lactate.
that's too mundane.
Well, no one's going thirsty tonight.
That one he used. Yes, he did use that. it was his take on girdle femininity. You have boobs. But it was Playboy world, so anyway. I waxed.
Wait, what was this campaign?
It's
a bonus episode. Come on.
Yeah, it was. It's one of the long-standing campaigns that I played in where everyone was beautiful. Literally, they were all based on Playboy playmates. All the gods.
Was this like Leather Goddesses of Phobos, or was it a regular setting?
This is a homebrew
like a
setting.
D&D fantasy
setting. It was
setting.
A homebrew fantasy
setting.
But it was
otherwise setting. Like serious.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It was serious, but everyone was beautiful. The only people that weren't beautiful were the people that he didn't like.
Like real people he didn't like were in the setting and they were ugly.
Yeah, yeah. Like most of the villains, if it was a female village, she was gorgeous.
He's ugly.
There was one ugly guy. There was one ugly guy. And then, of course, if he didn't really care for you as a player that much, then you were not really pretty. You were average at best.
You couldn't dictate what your PC looked like, and he did. And pretty all much, of his NPCs were beautiful, and he didn't like you. You were ugly.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure that was a Twilight Zone. Wasn't that a Twilight Zone? In college.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, the Twilight Zone was where they all had pig faces, and the pretty one was getting surgery to correct it, and they couldn't fix it.
Yeah.
That was college? That sounds like a middle school
game. That was high school into college. That was high school into college, extending into present day, but I didn't say that.
There is no excuse for that. If you had said to me, we did this back in junior high, maybe even high school, I'd have been okay. But college into adulthood, no, you've got no excuse. That's just sad and wrong. By the way, we'll be speaking on gender relations and identity issues and politics at UC Berkeley. Never. So,
what?
John, Chris, it's one of you two now.
No, Pat didn't tell me what he hated.
He was just agreeing with my hatred.
I sort of touched on that one, though, so I'll come back to it. You go ahead, John.
I don't have one. Chris, you go.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am at the moment, too. I'm trying to think of
the
something
only two
else.
I came up with? Hold on.
Wow.
Take a little bit more time, Chris, please.
Do you think I should? Okay, let me have it form, coalesce a little bit.
Breathe deeply. Clench your buttocks.
It's kind of coming together. Speaking of that, I'm interested to see what you guys actually ended up talking about my butt. Apparently, that episode at this recording has not aired yet.
I don't speak about your ass, Chris. I really don't.
Look, Chris, I brought up the point that you're a very well-toned human being, and if you've ever, patted Chris on the back or given him a hug at Fear the Con or something, you just got some muscle on you. And so it went on from there. I think it was Chad that was like, Chris's butt is a diamond or something like that, and he can break a chair. So it sort of got out of hand. It escalated because, I don't know, Chad was there.
I can crush a walnut in my butt cheeks.
I believe that.
No, actually, I don't know if I can.
You should see what he does to gerbils.
I haven't tried lately.
Armageddon.
What do I hate? What do I want to go away in gaming? You know, honestly, I think Tom Cruise. Probably.
Yes.
Yes, that can go away as well.
Hasbro can
time,
go away.
Or lack of time, I think, is one thing. I think that because that's one of my biggest frustrations. Talked about it. In college, you had the time to write out the ridiculous list of ridiculous things and, you know, flaunt it in front of your players like, look at what I just did. But I get to do that now. It's like I'm scrambling to make notes of my campaign, you know, 12 hours before it hits the table to make sure that I can run something that's coherent and matches with, you know, what happened in the last session. And that drives me crazy. You just don't get the time to do that kind of stuff, and all that shit that gets in your way gets frustrating. Life. Because this is your recreational activity and you want to have it a good time at it, but you need all that prep time beforehand. At least as far as on the GM side of things, you know, when you're a player, it's much easier. Although you don't get to fawn over your characters and make notes and think of, you know, what you want to do with them. But the other thing, honestly, that really just kind of drives me nuts, and this is related to that, to the whole time thing, is rules lawyers. I get it. I really do. I get that the rules are there for a reason and that, you know, using them correctly at times absolutely makes all the difference in the world. It makes things fair and keeps things balanced, but that stuff bothers me. I don't mind people being reasonable about it. Well, you really can't do that because this, and then we make adjustments on the fly. But if you're going to screw the rules to just purposely get me, I'm not really feeling that, bro. It just doesn't quite work for me.
All right.
So wait a minute. You hate strict applications of the rules, or you hate loose readings of the rules when they go against you, or both?
No, I don't mind if rules go against me. What I do mind is when people, for example, I had a player who taking the letter of the law in the rule books, he basically closed his eyes to get rid of like a displacement or a mirror image spell. And then swung, see, I don't even remember the rule because it just pissed me off so much, but he swung his sword and with his eyes closed, since he wasn't affected by the illusion, he now had a 20% chance to actually hit the real thing.
That's because he had blind fighting, Chris.
You know what? He may have had blind fighting, but the thing was, tactically on the map, the real person wasn't even nearby. But yet he persisted to say, no, it allows me to do this.
Wait a minute.
And I kept...
His argument that with the actual enemy was nowhere nearby, he had a chance to hit them at melee of 20% because he had blind fighting.
I think that's what it was.
That's really stupid.
But the person was, the actual target was at least 10 feet away from him. So even if he took, you know, even if he took a 5-foot step in the wrong direction, I don't know, he made his case and technically he was correct.
No, he wasn't.
But realistically,
no,
he was wrong.
I see where the guy's coming from, and he was, actually.
What do you mean?
Oh, man, this is going to turn
your ass. Break it down.
Way.
I know the blind fighting rules.
I love it.
Okay.
I'm getting a hard
one. No, the breakdown is this. A mirror image creates multiple duplicates of the target, which randomly rearrange themselves.
Okay. You're so turning me on as you're doing this.
I know, I know. Oh, by the way, one of the other things that goes needs to go away is people who don't follow the rules when they play role-playing game, Chris.
That's true.
But you know what, though? That's the thing, is that I'm more than reasonable. If somebody says, whoa, hey, wait a second, actually, the rules do this, it's all in the presentation for me, man. If he's going to come at me and say, really, actually, the rules are saying this, okay, I'm cool with that. But if he, it's that intentional rules screw that really just grinds my gears. It just drives me nuts when people, you know, just screw the rules to their benefit like that. That stuff I can't stand. Oh, I have a plus 40 diplomacy check. Well, clearly that means not only do I pregnant them, but I can make shoot out their mouth.
I've done that before.
Well, what else is anything above plus 20 in diplomacy for? That's a dexterity question. Check. That's an escape artist check.
The last actual D&D game I had, I played a character that specialized in social skills. And you know what? The DM did not let me use them. That not sucks. According to the rules. So I had a character that I had taken all of the feats and skill specializations I can. That was what he did, was talk to people. And I could intimidate or lie my way out of any situation by the rules, and I was not able to use
it. You know, we have discussed that ad nauseum in this, to the point where I have learned my lesson to the fact that I basically don't like to take characters that depend on social skills.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, that being said, the current Sunday game, my highest skill is charm.
Yeah, I was going to say,
that is...
I've never seen you, Pat, roll a character that has bad social skills. Most of them, they're the defining... You're usually the cha monkey.
You do
play. And even when you are like a caster, you're a super high cha caster.
And you do tend to play high society, well-spoken. And I also got to say, I would hope that would come down to GM, because in my games, social skills will get you pretty far.
I guess that's what I'm talking about. It seems like we've had a lot of people that have, you know, we'll run into that where it's like they don't want... Well, I think it's more with Chad, where Chad doesn't want the rule to dictate your social ability. Mm-hmm. He wants you to role play it.
Which rolls it back to my point that I just said. If you don't like the rules, don't play that system.
Yeah.
You know,
right. I
have no problem with rules light systems. I think they're fantastic. But if you're going to play a rules heavy system, follow the freaking rules.
You can and role play it rules, and too. Roll and for it.
That's the thing. Yes. That's what gets me as a counterpoint to what Chris is saying. I think that if you're in a situation, take Chris's situation right there, you didn't know the rules well enough or didn't know every aspect of it enough not to let yourself get into a trap. You allowed yourself as the GM to be backed into a corner by a player that outplayed you.
If your NPC is going to cast Mirror Image, know how Mirror Image works.
And I know that's not an easy thing to do. I'm not saying that all GMs should be able to do this. I'm just saying that you're going to be aware of it, because you are going to come up with people that are rules lawyers or that are very knowledgeable in the rules, because that's the way I am. I like to know the rules of the system. As an engineer, I'm going to know what the stats do, how the stats work, how the feats go together.
Right.
I'm going to build a very optimal character to do what I want it to do. You can call it min-maxing, but it's not really, I'm not that bad at it. It's just, that's the way I operate. So that's what I'm going to be doing. So you've got to be prepared for that kind of a thing.
And in that specific situation, the real failing in that was me, because I should have DM fiated that, no, I'm not going to let you do that. But because he and I are friends, we get along, you know, he's a good guy, I'm a good guy, me trying to be reasonable in light of what's coming at me, I kind of let him, you know, railroad me into that particular situation. And I probably shouldn't have done that. But then that also then counterpoint is, if we're both reasonable adults, let's be reasonable about the situation and let's not get to that point in the first place. I mean, they weren't in such a dire combat position that he needed to go to that level of thing to save their asses. It wasn't necessary, you know, and most of the time, not really going to be that necessary. But I'm there to have a good time, and I like to play by the rules, and so should everybody else. And to have to get into those situations, I think then there's a fundamental flaw in the game in the first place in what you're playing.
And as a side discussion on this, if you have a home system, a homebrew system, and you've made up all of your rules for that system, make sure they're ironclad. Test them out very well, because I take a perverse glee
in
fucking with rules. I've done this to many people. To the one that I talked about earlier,
system, I will wreck it.
Yes, I will just destroy your with your own poorly ass backwards fucking rule system that you try to put in place
and
here.
You
that
you think is so
awesome. This is epic.
Okay, let me cut a middle ground on that. You want to know why the rules abortions of the 80s occurred? It's because of the fact that what they were trying to do was stop players from abusing the rules. And so they piled rule upon rule upon rule upon rule.
Which achieved the opposite of their goal.
Uh-huh. And they died in character
creation. Right. What happened was you ended up with rules that were so confused that they were even more exploitable than before.
Yep.
Right. And a lot of these simpler games that came in the decades that followed were kind of a pushback of saying, look, don't be a douche. Mm-hmm. The fact that you can get away with something, have some common sense, be, you know, a gentleman or a lady at the table, and kind of play within the spirit.
If you're Pat, one or the other.
Yeah, if you're Pat, either one.
Yes.
But play within the spirit of the rules. When I buy an RPG book, look, they've got a certain page budget. Now, they can either devote 50 pages to additional setting and cool stuff, or they can devote 50 pages to try and keep people from abusing rules given in the prior 50 pages.
Yeah. You know what?
I would prefer the former to the latter any day of the week.
And here's my advice overall on that is simple rules are fine. What it really boils down to, and like this is for me, for my example, for what I just said, I like to screw with things. What it boils down to is you've got your players and you've got your GM. GM, don't be an asshole to your players.
Yes.
And your players won't be an asshole back to you.
Sometimes.
You want to know why I was an asshole to certain GMs?
Because
they were asshole to me. So I was like, fuck you. I'm destroying your game. And that's what happened.
I've been there too.
You
know, too.
You can do it. Like you said, we can all be gentlemen.
Yeah. I've done both sides of that, I got ignorant as a game master or as a player because someone on the opposite side of that role was being an ignorant jackass to me.
Yep.
So, Pat, yes, I completely agree with you.
I discovered what I hate about gaming. Not being a kid anymore. Talking about this, being like,
that sucks.
Everyone I game with works. I work. Mm-hmm. We have kids screwing things up. We can't schedule anything. When did this happen? I went to the bowling alley Saturday morning and I looked around and I was checking some girls out and then like their little kids came back up and it was a birthday party and I realized they're in my peer group and they don't even appear to be like accidental moms. This is a real mom thing. Yeah. This is like a school group and I'm as old as them now.
Well,
and I don't know how that happened.
John, as I've said before, you know you have reached old age when your friends start having babies on purpose.
And they are.
Yeah, on purpose. That's right.
I'm sitting there like, if I started college again when I graduated, I would already be out and out by like 2 years. This is tragic.
It is actually. It is tragic. We've talked about that before when it came to holidays. Holidays were the absolute best time to game because we're on break.
Oh, yeah.
We're all at home.
God,
and I know that,
yes.
I know that you guys
Christmas
had problems
break.
With it, but holidays awesome for me because we had like a 3 to 7 day stretch where we had nothing going on, but let's get around the table. Let's do some
holidays,
awesome.
Chris. Remember summer break?
Summer.
Oh, my gosh.
Holy 3 months of nothing to do. Maybe you've got a summer job, whatever.
Yeah, we got to help your dad here and there. But it's like after that, boom, your night times were free, baby.
I tell all these little bastards that I see nowadays, I'm like, you guys don't know how good you've got it. Stay in school as long as you fucking can.
I did, but I'm out now. And that's the problem.
Because you have no idea. It's like, and I love it when people, they'll complain about how hard it is, how hard school is.
No.
No, it's not.
No.
It's fucking easy. I don't care what your workload is. I don't care how many hours you got in your semester, how much homework you've got. It doesn't hold a fucking candle to holding down a 40-plus hour job a week.
Nope.
God bless my life as a self-employed dink.
You're just a dink in general. Do you remember when that was actually a reasonable insult? Dink?
Chris? Yeah, well, how would dink be an insult? Dink is like, in my mind, the ideal lifestyle. Actually, did you know?
Well, no. Now, but see, that's the thing. Now, double income, no kids, that's a desirable way of life. No, back when you were younger, dink was an insult.
Oh, yeah, but it wasn't used as an acronym.
It wasn't used as an acronym, no.
When I was younger, Mr. Dink was across the street from Doug.
It's not anymore, no.
Doug was a twink.
Speaking of twink.
There we go.
You happen? I don't want to get in the tangent about Always Sunny in Philadelphia, but they had a big, large discussion about twinks and bears and all that stuff. Anyway.
Yep.
Okay, going back to actually Pat's gender switching, because that actually happened to one of my characters.
Not Pat's character's gender switching.
No.
Pat's gender switching.
Yes, my gender bending.
Why do you think her
Pat's
name is
reassignment
Pat.
Surgery?
It works any way you do.
That's right.
That's one of the things that actually bugs me is, now I know it's always very difficult to play a different gender at the table as far as your character goes. You know, and there are certain stereotypes that everyone latches onto.
I know just how to play a female.
Just
take a man.
Just, the gross over exaggeration of those stereotypes. That drives me crazy. It becomes actually a distraction because, you know, you're either the guy playing the, you know, unrealistically gorgeous slut, or you're the idiotic guy that has no sense of judgment and just does stupid crap all the time if your players are that opposite gender. That stuff drives me crazy because it kind of ruins a campaign in a sense, because they're always commanding so much attention because of the things that they're doing, which are completely unrealistic and out of gender.
Chris, I will kind of continue that thought a little bit in saying that when a guy plays a woman, a lot of the times it's either total whore or it's asexual battle chick.
Yep.
But while it is less common, at least in my age demographic, I've seen the reverse. I have seen women play men and play them just as offensively, where they take the absolute worst misandrist stereotypes of men, and they are just hormonally driven, brainless, everything must be dealt with by violence. They have no sense of intuition, no sense of compassion, no sense of nuance. You know, it's just everything is dealt with either by a penis or a hammer. And
how else do you
solve problems? Sometimes the hammer is the penis.
That's the third option there. Chris got it. Chris is at the head of the class here. But I have seen the other way around. It's not common by any stretch of the imagination. And I will say that most of the women I've gamed with, when they have chosen to play as men, have done so responsibly. But you know what? In all fairness, I will also say that in my adult life, not so much in my teenage life, but in my adult life, most men I've played with who have played a female have also done so with maturity and responsibility. But if we want to talk about kind of the sophomoric idiocy, I've seen that come from both genders. It's just more common from men for a simple reason that, at least within my age group, there are a lot more male gamers than female gamers. Now, I know if you look at the demographic overall, that's very rapidly changed. I mean, what is it, 40% of tabletop gamers or something like that are now female?
Awesome.
And in video gaming, it's now approaching perfect parity.
Yeah.
If you count Bejeweled and there's actually more women than men.
I'm going to pretend you didn't say that, John.
What?
Bejeweled. I was thinking Farmville or something like that, like Facebook shit, but yeah. And if you include Facebook, they dominate us by 20-1. Farmville. Or whatever the hell it is they're playing.
Farmville now. 2 is out now.
Yeah, everyone, also Happy Farm.
Everyone, yeah, go ahead. It won't matter.
Friend Pat on Facebook.
He's not going to answer it anyway.
All those requests just sit there in the queue
and just with all the rest of them. He loves your Farmville request, your Cityville request, your whatever it is. He wants it. He needs it. Yeah, he cannot help but click yes on every single link that pops up.
He does
up
want to help you win your Mafia War, believe me.
Yeah. Yes. He is deeply concerned about it. He called me the other night. I was like, Dan, have you fed your chickens? And I'm like,
Pat? And you said, no, I've choked them, but I have not fed them.
Pat, I don't even have a farm. I'm not even playing Farmville.
Yes, you do.
He's like, that's my point. Make some chickens, and I will feed them for you.
That's right. And then we'll choke them together. And
then we will choke them.
Group choke.
Yep.
So John, did you give yours yet?
That was mine.
That was
I
yours.
Hate not being under 22 and trying to tabletop role playing.
That's fair enough. It's not exactly a gaming trope, but nonetheless, it is a gaming situation.
It's a condition that's relatively novel to me.
Is there a gaming?
And that's far more disastrous than any one gaming trope that grates on me. Do I have a gaming trope?
You know, I was
trope?
About to ask you for a gaming trope, but actually, with that one phrase, I kind of ran that through my head like, yeah. Actually, real life conditions have been far more destructive and far more frustrating than any trope. I have encountered the kid mechanic far more often than the traitor mechanic.
Yes.
I have encountered the cursed schedule far more than I have encountered the cursed item. I guess the theme of this episode is...
Is we're crotchety old men bitching about the old days.
Yeah, I guess.
If you're young...
Cloud!
Back in my day,
I remember
it's not even back in my day because
we
it's
were
the
playing
same
first
day.
Edition D&D. I mean, I had an onion on my belt, which was the style. This
was
the
style
back then.
And we always bought 3 bulbs of garlic and a clove of wolf's bane for our first level fighter. We don't know why, but we did. It was on the equipment list for some reason.
It occurred back in 1906 because the Kaiser had stolen our word for 20.
Yes, Chris, you were
Johan,
saying
what is I'm very curious to know now that we're sitting here waxing and waiting and all this When you used to create characters, what was the one piece of equipment that you always got, regardless, you know, I mean, what was the one item that you always had to write down on your equipment list?
Oh, no. You have clearly never seen one of my old character sheets.
No, I haven't.
My equipment list tended to be encyclopedic.
Mine too. It was always one weapon, one piece of armor, and the entirety of the gear list.
Yeah.
Mine was just a 10-foot pole until I started playing orc characters.
Okay, let me put it this way. What one item did you always put on there that you never actually used, but you always had to have it on the sheet?
Wolfsbane and garlic. Yeah, because there's actually not a single game mechanic, as far as I know, in first edition D&D for either of them. And yet they were on the equipment list and I felt the need to buy them.
Surely a GM would have allowed you to apply garlic against a vampire.
Well, yeah, actually, I think garlic might be an exception. Wolfsbane, though, I don't think had any effect on werewolves.
Did it change in later editions to where Wolfsbane did have an effect on lycanthrope?
I thought in the 1E monster manual that there was for the werewolf, I thought that Wolfsbane was mentioned in there.
Damn, my 1E monster manual is at home. I can't check. But,
well, I don't have a 1E monster. I have a 2E monster manual here.
I would swear that there was no actual impact from it. The only impact from garlic was that was one of the options for permanently killing a vampire was to cut its head off and stuff its mouth full of holy wafers and garlic.
Yes, and it had to be like its head had to be facing the other way or something like that.
Yeah, it was something. It's ridiculous. Weird. Those are the only things I don't think I ever really ever used, but my equipment list tended to be very extensive.
Encumbrance rules were optional for you, in other words?
No, not necessarily. If they were, depending on the GM, if they were, then it would be more extensive. But if they weren't, I would calculate it out appropriately and work out exactly how much I could carry.
I hate encumbrance.
I know. That's one thing I always hated was encumbrance, because it was like, it just was more bookkeeping. It drove me fucking nuts.
It is a makes lot of sense. Bookkeeping. It does. It makes sense, but there's a limit to my realism, I think. You know, there are certain systems that are hyper realistic, and you just get bogged down in the tables and the rules and the minutia of it. And, you know, there's just got to be a good balance of
it. I don't mind encumbrance rules, but I only appreciate their use in the sort of game that they matter in, which is basically a game wherein the DM is going to wage a war of attrition on you. Mm. And therefore, it becomes very important to know exactly how many arrows you are carrying.
Right.
Because it might be the rest of the campaign before you get any more. And so you have to know exactly how many you have. You have to know how much food you're carrying, how many water skins. And those games can actually be very fun, intense, and survivalist. Mm-hmm. But if you're not going to run that kind of game, don't mess with encumbrance.
Yeah, we pretty much never did. I think we would just not worry with encumbrance. I remember one time we did look at it on a lark. Let's look at our encumbrance and see how much of this we could actually carry. It's like 90% of our character sheet was like, we can't carry all this around.
Yep.
Like I had a paladin that was literally a armory on a horse.
Well, so the one rule I did apply was the armor slowdown stuff. And when you have a paladin, you're going to hit that.
The second edition monster manual.
I had one
for
every weapon.
The second edition I'll tell my story on that in a second. But the second edition monstrous manual, the entry on lycanthropy and rare creatures and journals is pages long. So I can't possibly write it now. But I did at least catch at one point in here that if you think you've been bitten, that belladonna can be consumed, at least gives you a percentile chance of not contracting lycanthropy.
Right. Yeah, I think that was added in second edition.
I've not looked forward to vampires yet to see if garlic does anything.
Oddly, I don't believe they mention anything about the possibility of sudden death from eating belladonna.
Yeah, never mind the belladonna is a toxic plant.
That's the percentage chance that you won't become a werewolf if it kills
because you're dead.
Yeah, because your ass is dead.
Other than that, so, you're a werewolf.
As for encumbrance, I have never used encumbrance. I have always operated by two simple principles. One, let's be reasonable about what you can carry.
Yes.
I did have a guy who played a Battletech game where he had no less than it was 6 or 10 rifles. He was carrying
half a dozen manpack PPCs, couple SR2s.
He had an item on him, which in the MechWarrior 2nd Edition book is described as like, I don't know, if you've ever been in an auto garage, you've seen not the toolbox, but like one of those like tool chest they push around.
Yeah, I've got one at home.
Yeah, he had one of those in his inventory. And that's on top of the half dozen rifles.
Yeah.
He had like 10 explosives, which were described each as being roughly football size. I mean, it just went on and on and on and on. That's rule one. Rule two is...
In other words, he was playing my dad, apparently.
Rule two is, regardless of how long your equipment list is, I do at least want to know where it is. And I don't mean like, is it in a pocket versus backpack? I just mean, is it on you? Is it in your mechs or on your horse? Is it back home? I just need to know where it is generally. And I don't even need specific information, because if somebody's going to pick your pocket, then picking a backpack's the same as picking a pocket to me or whatever.
Back in the days of when I had too much time, I would actually list out where exactly on my character's person various items were, what was attached to belt on which side, and blah, 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 blah.
I never did that.
So, Chris, while we're talking about old people things.
Page, here we go. Page 355.
There you go. Old people things.
Yeah, old people things. Garlic will prevent the creature from attacking or entering the area, while mirrors and holy symbols force the vampire to find some means of removing the offending object before it can be bypassed. As a second edition, at least Garlic and Belladonna / Wolvesbane did both do something.
Wait a minute. Is that saying that a vampire won't pass by a mirror? Because,
yeah, I was wondering about that one myself.
Yeah, that's what just right here.
That's actual traditional vampire lore.
Yeah.
Right on.
That if there's a mirror in the room, it won't go in the room because it...
Keep in mind.
It won't go to anywhere that... It would be reflected.
Yeah, because keep in mind that vampire lore greatly predates the work of Anne Rice and all those kinds
of
people.
Or even Bram Stoker.
Yeah, so have you ever read something like the Gale Research Encyclopedia of Occultism and Parapsychology? It's a very different read than something like Bram Stoker. Whatever.
Like the traditional method of killing the vampire by the stake. Originally, the lore was that you had to stake them to the ground, because that allowed the spirit to exit the flesh of the vampire and return to the underworld.
Oh.
It was not just a matter of putting a stake through their heart. You actually had to stake them into the ground.
Yeah. The full paragraph is, despite the great powers which vampires obviously possess, they are not without weaknesses of their own. The order of strong garlic repels them, and they will not approach it. Further, they will recoil from the face of a mirror or lawful good holy symbol if either of these is presented them with courage and conviction. It is important to understand, however, that this will not actually harm the vampire in any way, nor drive it off. Garlic will prevent the creature from attacking or entering the area, while mirrors and holy symbols force the vampire to find some means of removing the offending object before it can be bypassed. In most cases, the vampire will seek to overcome these hazards with the aid of its minions. For example, a charmed person might be called upon to attack someone who's holding the vampire bait with a holy symbol.
Okay.
That's why my characters always surrounded themselves with Italians.
You know what, Chris?
Chris, all
we're
I got
very strong
say.
Vampire hunters. All right. It has nothing to do with
our
culinary tradition.
To be more specific, Italians from the 70s, they usually wore reflective clothing. Johan, you were going to ask me some sort of old guy question?
Oh, yes. Back to first edition. There is one set of rules in first edition that I have never known anyone ever to actually use in a game, and I'm wondering if you did.
Weapon speed?
That too, but I was thinking of the damage tables that applied various two-hit rolls and damages based on comparing your weapon to the type of armor that your opponent
was
wearing.
Oh, that was even in second edition.
Oh, was it in second as
both
well?
Both weapon speed, because weapon speed and casting time were both...
Weapon speed I've used,
were
actually
both supposed to modify your initiative in second edition.
Yes.
And even in second edition, while it was in the DMG as an optional rule, they still had the, if you're wearing chainmail, it's really good against piercing, but doesn't do jack against blunt. And they still had that in there, even as of second edition. I know that because I own first edition, but I've only skimmed the rules. It was the second edition rules that I started reading really in detail. And I'm familiar with those rules.
First edition had a 2-page chart of every weapon in the equipment list compared to every type of armor and what all the modifiers would be.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So, yeah. And I remember that.
Yeah. No, I never used those. Some of my friends, they tried a game too where they use weapon speed, but I never personally.
Yeah. Now I have used weapon speed and casting times, and in my mind, that actually adds a great deal to the old D&D.
I agree. I liked those. Mm-hmm.
I like
you also though, in that I did not bother with the weapon type versus the armor type because it was just too much to keep track of.
it just got way too confusing, way too fast. But I did use the casting times and weapon speeds because I'm with you that even
and
if
that
you
goes
had
a long way toward undoing the utter supremacy of casters.
Well, yeah, because even if they had the capacity to put out this kill all spell, the casting time on it, even if it's only one round or within that round, I should say, so it's not a full round, but it's part of that round, the casting time could be so far down the chain that by the time it's gotten to their turn, they have been beat on so many times by so many other people.
And then
that
if you actually follow the initiative rules as well, they have to declare their target at the beginning.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then everyone goes. So their target may very well be dead by the time the spell
if they targeted
off.
An area.
Right. There may be friendly
fire, literally.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
so many dead parties because of miscalculated fireballs.
All right. Well, I think with that, it's this one may come up a little bit short, but that's all right.
It's a bonus.
Oh, come on. We can spend another 10 minutes talking about calculating the cubic footage of fireballs in first edition.
Oh,
that was one of the best rules ever.
Then they would do that crazy stuff after the fireball because the complete and utter lack of oxygen in the area. So then you have to wait until the oxygen gets back in there.
What? If you want to go that far.
Yes. Yeah, I know.
You want
exactly.
to know what the real danger of a fireball is? I mean, outside of fire.
Oh, I don't know. 1d6 damage per level on a 30-foot burst.
Precisely. Okay, let's work
sounds
through.
Sounds like the real danger of a fireball to me.
Let's work through the physics of it. Pat, you're a physicist. What happens after an explosion?
Well, there's a...
Dead kobolds?
You're talking about the shockwave?
Every action has an equal and opposite reaction.
Oh,
every explosion is pursued by an implosion.
Yeah.
And so if you were to set off a fireball that takes up a huge portion of a room, it's not just going to be a lack of oxygen. That force will have actually created a pseudo vacuum, and you are then going to get a reverse suction. Same thing with an atomic bomb. If you've ever watched video of an atomic bomb going off, you'll see everything getting pushed outward, and then you'll see everything getting pulled inward as everything kind of rushes back to fill in the space left behind. Yeah. And this is one of those things. Is my point that we ought to incorporate this in role-playing games? No, the exact opposite. My point is that if you really want to carry this all the way through to talk about, well, there's not enough oxygen to breathe, well, then you might as well start piling on all the other details of physics that reduce the game to just an absurd word problem as opposed to a story.
Yeah. Have you ever been in a group that calculated falling time into rounds?
No.
So if somebody was suffering from a particularly long drop, you know, back in the days of 6 second rounds, no, they're 6 seconds now.
They were 10 originally. Yeah. They're 10 second rounds. Yeah.
No, they were minute rounds.
Well, no,
back
at first
in the
edition,
day.
They were 1 minute.
Yeah.
1 minute was a round and 10 minutes was a turn.
Jeez, yeah. That's so long.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, a really good example of the
that's
of your,
one for the sound
of what you were just talking about, Dan, is if because it's easier to see it in water. One of the things that they do is with like this, the ship buster torpedoes. I mean, we're talking, these things are huge. They're designed to not hit the ship. They're designed to explode underneath the middle of the ship. And the explosion creates a hole in the water, which after the explosion, that hole is immediately filled in and the ship that's above it is sucked into it. And literally,
if you ever listen to someone who's seen one of those occur,
I mean, even
that's
even
how
the World War II,
the ship is lifted up.
Yeah. And then,
falls back down and breaks in half.
So that, yeah, conventional torpedoes do the same thing, but there are, and I think the Russians were big into this when they were like building it. Literally, it was a super torpedo that literally used a jet engine and it would go through the water. It was like, basically imagine something on, you know, on along the orders of like a nuke, which I think is what it was, fired in the water toward an aircraft carrier. And it was designed to literally bust the aircraft carrier in half. That's the kind of force we're talking about. And again, it was not supposed to hit the aircraft carrier. It was supposed to go underneath it and explode like 20 feet under it, under its bow. And boom, that would be it. So again, it's just easier to see that because I think it's hard to think about air not being there and then collapsing back on itself. But water is a good example because it's a fluid.
So the moral of the story is next time you play a caster,
on physics,
cast your fireball under the orcs and then argue about it with the GM for the next 3 hours.
That is exactly.
Absolutely.
And then it turns out that the orc was actually there to help and you were the traitor.
Yes.
This is precisely.
And then someone's kid runs crying into the room and ends the game.
This is exactly what we advise. If Fear the Boot has given you no useful advice to this point, this is how to improve your games.
If someone has an actual play and uses all of these bad things in them in one game, we want to see it.
Oh, somebody is going to run this at Fear the Con. You know they are.
Yes. They're going to call the event Go Away.
Yes. Awesome.
Vacuum Orc, the traitor. So,
the traitoring.
Anyway, I think that's enough for this one. So I'm very sorry you tuned in. Have a great week, and we will catch each and every one of you next time.
Awesome.
See ya.